You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
At home and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every single week, is
Tristan Riddell.
And we're going to do a Saturday morning special for you because when we were recording this, it is early and it's Saturday, but we're going to have a 3-day weekend because in the US it's Labor Day, and so we can sleep whenever we want. We're going to open up a beautiful holiday weekend with a commentary.
Before we get into what we're going to do, I just want to note to everyone listening that I love how Shar thinks that 10 a.m. on a Saturday is quote-unquote early.
It is for me, man.
All right. Well, what we're doing to console you because you had to get up so early is we're watching Season 3, Episode 22, Real Life, and this is how it's described on Netflix. The Doctor creates a holographic family, but B'Elanna thinks the simulation is too nice. She makes alterations to make the program more accurate.
Mm. Yes, yes.
Which is kind of a jerk move, if you think about it.
Yes, sort of, but, well, let's just watch this thing because, I mean, is she wrong here?
Let's ask the question and then answer it.
All right. Well, as we do with our commentaries, if you want to follow along with us and actually watch the episode with us, we'll give you a countdown. And for those of you just listening in the car, well, cool. Let's just roll. And so here it comes. The countdown begins in 3, 2, 1, play. So just to kick things off, I want this house.
It's you know, for those of you listening at home, it's a very nice 20th century modern house. It's got the cool fireplace. You see the technology in the background, but it's very much, you know, intermixed with what we would consider a normal house, and it's got random mm-hmm. artwork, and it's just very pleasant. It's very homey, very suburban life.
It really is, because it's got these triangular windows and then the door to match, and it's very kind of artsy.
That has to be a Jake Sisko vest that the son is wearing.
Oh, it totally is. Yes. Had I remembered this, I would have gone on to TrekCore or something and looked through images to make sure Jake has not actually worn that vest at some point, because that's totally a Jake Sisko vest.
Now, the actress playing the Doctor's wife is the voice actress on American Dad who plays Francine Smith. Do you watch American Dad at all?
I do not. No.
It is a hilarious show. It's the best of the McFarlane cartoons. And yeah. I know some of you out there are like, oh, that's not saying much. But it's really good. And she is probably one of the best parts of the show. And she looks exactly like her Tron character.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, speaking of clothing, what do you think about the ladies in the Doctor's simulation here? They have, I feel like, very boring outfits.
It is pretty boring. And we actually talked about this episode at length on our costume episode.
That's right, we did.
Yeah, and so definitely, you guys should definitely, if you haven't listened to it, you should go back and find it, because it's we go through our favorite episodes costume wise, and I think I made a video for you guys could actually watch along with it, and so
yeah, you
could actually see the costumes, because talking about fashion is sometimes hard to do on a radio medium.
This is true. But you know what? I think we did a fantastic job of describing things. I mean, way better than Joan Rivers, because it wasn't just massive insult after massive insult.
Oh, sweetie, what? This is the 24th century, not the 21st.
Yeah.
So once again, I'm always enraptured by this this opening. I know we talk about it every single time we have a commentary.
Pretty much.
It's just, it's the best opening out of every single Star Trek. Way better than Enterprise.
It's so pretty. It is. They did such a bang up job. I think for the first at least three seasons, I did not skip watching the intro when the show aired, just because it's nice and it's pleasant. Jerry Goldsmith has the perfect musical score to go along with it. I think it's the best one too.
I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but do you know if they're going to, or what do you think they're going to do? Like, do you think they're going to redo it when they produce it in high definition, or do you think they'll, you know, like, do you think they'll have to start from scratch, or do you think they'll have the original files? It'd be interesting to see.
Ooh, I would hate to think that they would redo it entirely from scratch. But that said, I suppose it depends on what sort of resources they have. So that's a very good question. I suppose we'll find out, hopefully, in a couple of years when the Okudas are working on it and they are doing Voyager on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
We can get all those details. Now, I was saying on the other side of the room before we started today that I was watching a little bit of a mini Voyager marathon last night, just watching random episodes here and there. And it just occurred to me that in every single episode I watched last night, Harry did nothing but stand behind his console.
That was it.
He didn't do anything else. And I mean, I picked him at random. This was not an intentional thing or at all. It's just apparently that is all he had to do. And he, again, is just la, 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 console ops, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, there are certain times when Harry doesn't always have the most incredible things to do. He's kind of Mr. Exposition a lot.
Yeah, he's just got to give Janeway the report and move the story along, which serves an important purpose, but I imagine as an actor that is boring.
You know, I have completely forgotten the B plot in this. I know nothing about it. Yeah, like when you think real life, you know, obviously the main story is about the doc and his family and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back on this, I honestly don't remember anything about the B plot. Like even as it's going on right now, it hasn't triggered any memory yet.
Yeah, come to think of it, I have no idea what the B plot is about either. It's obviously that memorable.
Oh, okay, I remember this haircut. This is the really cool braid on one side, B'Elanna.
Yes. This didn't last very long, if I recall.
No, this only lasted like two or three episodes at most, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I imagine Tommy did, too. I think she was trying to gussy up a little bit for Tom. This is when they were starting to edge into their relationship a little bit. And so, you know, she's putting a little bit of effort, trying to get noticed. And this, of course, is Kes with the long hair, because at this point, Jennifer Lean was allergic to her ear makeup. And so this was the easy way to cover that up.
And also, when you have that much hair, it's got to be hard to hide underneath a wig.
You would think, right? Oof.
Because Roxanne Dawson's wearing a wig right now, too. But she had much shorter hair.
Oh, yeah, much shorter. So, yeah, I always kind of wondered how they did that. Like, how would you get the bald cap or the wig or whatever it is, however you do it, because I'm not by any means a professional, obviously, because I don't know how it's done. How do you get all that hair and still make the head look natural?
I don't know. It's got to be hard. I mean, if you remember Kes's hair when she had the short wig on, it did poof out.
Yeah, the pixie haircut.
Yeah.
But then, like, I never noticed, like, she had a misshapen head or an awfully big head or anything like that. I don't know.
These people just know what they're doing.
They're professionals. That's why they work in Hollywood. Still, I'd love to know how they do that. I want to know all their tricks.
I love the suburban dinner scenes whenever they go on, because it's always one extreme or the other, where it's when they're portrayed in movies and television, it's either very overly nice and very overly professional to a point where you can't believe it, or it's like so bubbling underneath all backhanded compliments, like you know, like you like it's just like, it's like, oh, finally, a good meal for once. You know, like stuff like that.
Which do you suppose is more true to life, given those two scenarios?
Given the two, I'd have to say somewhere in the middle. I mean, I grew up with a really, really nice suburban home and family, and we were all really nice to each other. And so I can definitely relate to the overly nice one, because I know that there are people who would see my home life and think, oh, that's not real.
Okay, so your family life was kind of like this? Is that what you're saying?
I more so than the backhanded compliment one, but no one's family is really like this. This is overly cheesy eye roll.
Maybe the Brady Bunch.
Here you go. Yeah, we were not the Brady Bunch, but...
this is the Brady Bunch in the 24th century right here, I think.
I love that B'Elanna gets so frustrated that she pauses the holodeck. She pauses another person's family because she just can't stand it anymore.
She might as well delete the wife, right?
Delete the wife. Now, how many times have you been at a dinner table where you just are like, oh my God, I can't take this anymore. And you just go, holodeck, pause. How often do you want to do that?
There are times when I wish I could have, but unfortunately I was not able to do so. But it wasn't because it was a vomit-worthy situation like this where it's so overly sappy and happy and innocent. It was more like, really, people? Really? More like that. So here's the B-plot again. What's going on?
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like we're just kind of wasting time in between scenes of the family.
This whole B-plot is probably just filler. Oh, let's make sure the bridge crew has something to do this week.
There's got to be, like, tech storylines and B storylines that they just have in a hat where it's kind of like in Family Guy, the cutaway. The cutaways in Family Guy, you know, they have nothing to do with the overall plot or character of the stories or anything like that. They just grab a cutaway from a hat and then throw it in the episode when they need it. Sometimes I feel like they just dip their hand in a hat and go, oh, this week it's a subspace distortion.
Did you ever see that episode of South Park where they explained how Family Guy writes its stories?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I envision it more as that.
You imagine manatees in a big pool picking out balls that have technobabble written on them. That's what you're saying.
Right, yeah. So they have just like, it's like fill in the blank. Something is wrong with the tech, and then tech happens, and so we're going to fix it with tech.
What's hysterical is, speaking of which, is that Seth MacFarlane has admitted that there is a room dedicated just to cutaways. There's a cutaway room where there's separate writers just for cutaways, where they just write cutaways all day and then store them. No lie. He just admitted this. He's like, no, we have a cutaway room.
Hey, props to him for actually admitting it. I got to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
And I guess it works. So why not?
I love that word in Star Trek, Eddie, Astral Eddie, because I always think of just like some guy from Boston, just like named Eddie.
Eddie from Boston.
Eddie from Boston.
I think Eddie Murphy.
All right. Well, I guess, you know, we all have our own perspectives.
I don't know if he's from Boston. I don't think so. I doubt it. He doesn't have the accent.
These scenes are so straightforward and so interchangeable.
Yeah, I still don't know what's going on, and I honestly do not care. Problem of the week. Let's put the ship in danger. Blah, blah, blah. Let's get back to the A-plot. Thank you.
Okay, one thing about this, now that we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the actual episode and we're... you know, 12 minutes in. I always thought that this situation wasn't quite fair.
Okay, how so?
Because, okay, here's the thing, is that when you have a family, 99% of the time, you're not thrown into a situation where you know nothing about these people. When you have a family as close as your wife and your two kids... I mean, he went into this completely blind because at this point, B'Elanna has changed all the characters and altered their personalities, made it more like, quote unquote, real life, like the name of the show.
Yeah.
And so he goes in expecting the people that he programmed and made, but just a little bit different. But now, like, they have situations about themselves. Like, she has a work situation that he's unaware of. You know, they both have school situations and after, you know, after school curricular activities that he's unaware of. And they have personalities that he's never encountered with before. And how are you supposed to deal with that? That's not real life. He's supposed to grow with these people, raise these people, not thrown into a situation like Mom Swap or whatever that horrible reality TV show was. That's what this episode is more like.
This is true. You know, that's a very good point. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, a family situation is much more gradual. Like, all of a sudden, Jeffrey wouldn't be listening to Klingon music and wanting to have Klingon friends, blah, blah, blah. This would happen gradually over time. He would go from being maybe that, you know, sweet vest-wearing dude to, you know, I need to kill somebody and get initiated.
Yeah.
Over the course of, say, years. But for the purposes of TV, though,
yes.
I mean, does this work? Or is it still kind of a cop-out?
Well, I think once we get past that point of that first meeting, that first day, and he starts to understand who they are, I think that's when we start to believe, okay, he's having a hard time adjusting to real life. He's having a hard time adjusting to the deep emotions that you feel when you lose someone or when someone gets hurt or this frustration of when a kid doesn't want to do his homework or is doing something stupid. I think we're able to relate to it, you know, after a while, but definitely not immediately.
Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe they could have been a little more subtle about it instead of so in your face.
Yes, I think you put it quite right. I feel like it could have been a gradual, like we see, Jeffrey, he shows an interest in Klingon culture and then all of a sudden starts to get more and more and does something rash or brash. And
yeah,
isn't she a little too old to be screaming, "I want mommy"?
Yeah, I believe so.
She's what, 12?
No, I assumed a little more like around 9 or 10, but I'm no expert.
Well, neither of us are experts on kids, as you probably could tell from last week's episode. But
right?
But no, it's just like, I just thought it was a little absurd and a little too fast and, like you said, a little too in your face. And
yeah. Like, okay, I think it would have been just enough to have the daughter screaming, "Oh, I can't find my mallet, blah, 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 help me, help me, I'm going to be late." And then, yeah, maybe have mom late for her meeting, what have you. But then make the Klingon thing a little more subtle where Jeffrey all of a sudden has these Klingon friends come over, but we don't really know what's going on. It's he has Klingon friends. Oh, they're playing with knives.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, that's not so good.
Yeah, the doc is just like, he's like, "Oh, yeah, come on in. Klingon friends, whatever. It's the 24th century. Right. We're not racist here."
Yeah, exactly. And so they go in, and then, like, later on, he finds Jeffrey's stash of Klingon paraphernalia, you know? And, like,
"Who taught you how to do this?" "I learned it from you."
Yeah. I wish they'd show that commercial again. It was so great.
Oh, it's such a genius commercial.
Oh, yeah. B'Elanna's reading romantic fanfic.
Okay, not everything is fanfic, okay? This
yes,
could
it
be
is.
A legitimate author with a legitimate publisher.
No, this is Klingon Harlequin. You know it is.
Klingon Harlequin. Okay, speaking of Klingon, okay, so I always thought that was a little weird because B'Elanna's the one who did all the alterations to the family, and she's the only Klingon crew member on the ship, and Jeffrey just happens to be obsessed with Klingon culture, even though there's thousands of, if not millions of cultures out there that they're aware of?
Coincidence? Probably not. I think that's B'Elanna's way of saying, "Welcome to my hell."
Yeah. Like, I have to deal with Klingons all the time, so you do too.
Yeah, exactly. This is what it's really like. This is what rages in my head all day.
I never get tired of that. I never get tired of seeing a ship come about or a subspace distortion or some sort of anomaly happen in the window of 10 forward or the mess hall or wherever. Like, I love seeing it from the perspective of people on the ship but not on the bridge.
Yeah. You know what made me fall in love with that was yesterday's Enterprise when the wormhole forms.
Yes.
And 10
I was
forward
just thinking of that.
And Guinan
yes.
stares at that. That is like the primo example of that. And I don't know if it was the first time that happened, but man, yeah.
No, that's really funny that you brought that up, because when I was started mentioning 10 Forward, that's exactly the situation that I was remembering was in yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah.
No, I remember something as early as season one of Next Gen where Picard said, like, their sensors weren't working or something like that, and so Picard told Geordi to go to 10 Forward and use his visor out the window.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And they only did that once.
They only did it once? Really? Okay. It's sort of like how Guinan's office was used approximately once, I believe. It was in some season two episode. I've not watched
TNG. It was the Borg one. It was Q. It was Q who?
You're right. Yeah. It was.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to go to my office. Why does a bartender need an office?
Well, she's got bookkeeping to do or something.
Requisitions and I need more booze.
Yeah, exactly. Inventory. She's doing inventory. I need more of the green stuff. I need more prune juice.
Those are the only two things that you can get at
At 10 Forward, yeah.
At 10 Forward, yeah.
Green alcoholic beverages and prune juice.
And that's how it's written down. Green stuff.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Transport vessels come about every 6 weeks. Give them a new case.
So much technobabble.
Still don't care about this B-plot.
Still not caring. Just want to get back to real life. Just think about how much development we could have with those characters and how much more gradual it could be if the B-plot was much more of a B-plot instead of masquerading as an A1.
Yeah, or just skip this all together and let's focus on the Doctor and his family, because that's what's really working in this episode.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have contracts, you gotta have more. You got to have the actor. Give all the actors enough screen time, and I don't know. I'm just
save
talking.
It for next week. Feature them, and then give Bob Picardo the week off.
There you go.
I mean, come on. There's a way to work around that. Very rarely did they do that. I don't know. I think that's another thing. Whereas if it were in today's today's TV environment, we would be able to just not have to have the B plot. You know, if something is going, you just go for it.
Yeah, that's the thing with episodic television, is that it's so ingrained in the culture and tradition of TV that you need the A-plot and you need the B-plot so that people don't get bored with the A-plot. But now I feel like
we're bored with the B-plot, so it's not working, is it?
Yeah, no, not at all. And this is one of those situations where it doesn't work.
Yeah, that is true, though. I mean, it's always the formula. Watch any episode of Voyager, practically, and you're going to get it.
Okay, this is,
I hate this scene.
This is one thing that's always kind of bothered me about the Doc using a holodeck. Why does he need to use a holodeck? Why can't there just be a situation or a piece of technology where he closes his eyes or he deactivates himself and he just exists in the computer in the holodeck? I mean, like, in a virtual holodeck within the isolinear chips or the gel packs or whatever, where... Why does he need a physical space to run a holodeck simulation?
Yeah, and if he's running this thing often enough, what about other crew members and their leisure time?
Exactly.
There's only so many holodecks, so is this fair? Yeah, that would make a lot more sense, actually, just because he could do this no problem.
And it would be very easy to... You know, establish that by saying, like, oh, there was a precedent where way back in on the Enterprise D, they had Moriarty and he existed in a cube.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is the story wouldn't have to change much. You would just have to outline that little factoid. And then everything we're seeing here would just be in the circuits, in his head. It wouldn't physically be on the holodeck.
And then when he wants to have visitors over, that's when you use the actual holodeck.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Great.
Bam. Done.
Boom.
Roasted. So then he no longer has to argue with Tom about his tea time, you know, like, because he can golf whenever he wants.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of the freedom of being a hologram, yes? I don't know. I don't feel like they use that element of the Doctor very much.
This scene is so racist for the 24th century.
I really do hate it because he's sitting the mom down along with the children rather than a joint discussion. They're not a unified force as parents should be. It should be them working together.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's kind of the point of the scene, because he has no idea how to be a real husband. He has no idea yeah. how to be a real father.
You're right. I think that is why. It's just, it bothers me so much.
But the thing is, he does know how to be a real person and not racist. Where he says, I don't want you hanging out with the Klingons. They're prone to violence. Why don't you get some nice Vulcan friends? Holy crap.
Yeah, there's that whole thing, too. Like, wow, really? Okay, then. Well, yeah, he's doing this all wrong.
And, like, and we know that he's not a racist because of his the episode with B'Elanna and the Cardassian doctor. Where he says, he's like, B'Elanna, I didn't think you'd judge somebody based on race. You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Character flaw? Bad writing?
I think it's bad writing.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah, that does not suit the doctor at all. Good catch. Have we ever seen Parisi Squares?
No, we've never seen it. We've only seen the most that we've seen from Parisi Squares is the outfits, the uniforms they wear, and that was in TNG. And they were wearing these really cool, they look like crime-fighting superhero outfits where they're nice and blue, shiny pads. And I think this is where we found out that it takes a mallet. Uh-huh. And I can't remember learning that from TNG. And also that there's a court that you could actually hit your head on, like on the like a corner or something like that.
Yes, apparently.
So it must be elevated in some fashion.
Something, yeah. I kind of wish we would have seen it, because that could be, like, the Quidditch of Star Trek.
Right? I mean, if we have time to see Anbojitsu, I feel like we should have had time to see Parisi Squares.
I think we should have sacrificed Anbojitsu for Parisi Squares, myself. But
Or Velocity.
Well, we saw a little bit of Velocity, didn't we?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying we've sacrificed Velocity to get some Parisi Squares.
Yeah, let's sacrifice that for sure. I want to see Parisi Squares. Of course, I'm sure the reason why they didn't was purely for budgetary reasons, because special effects.
Yeah, Velocity is quite easy to play in the holodeck and also create.
But you know what? I think in this day and age, though, they would show it, because animation, CGI, it's all gotten so much easier and cheaper. They could probably do it now. Okay, next Trek series, I want Parisi Squares.
Parisi Squares, people.
I'm putting it on my list.
Listen, producers and writers of future Star Trek show.
Yes. Yeah, if and when it happens.
Another Eddie from Boston.
I'm trying to think of Bostonian last names for all these Eddies.
Something Irish.
Yeah. Eddie O'Halloran.
There you go. Yeah. Wait, what was O'Claire? That was Katie O'Claire. That was...
Oh, God, Eddie O'Claire. No.
It's the brother of Katie O'Claire.
Oh, no.
From Boston.
No. Turn off the B plot now. I don't want to do this. Astral Eddie. That sounds like Grandpa Eddie. Kind of the patriarch of all the Eddies.
And so the subspace dispersion, whatever you want to call it, just swallowed up Tom. And we're never going to see him again.
Right. Yeah, of course. That's how it works. And I still don't care about what's happening. Nope. Completely forgettable. Blah, blah, blah. I have a feeling if I were doing this week in and week out with this dark lighting, it would be very easy to want to go to sleep.
Right.
Ugh. Because they do a lot of red alert.
Seeing Chakotay, I have a Twitter follow who I love talking to, and I'm pretty sure she loves the show. And she was talking about a time that she interacted with Chakotay and Robert Beltran.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
Because I was asking, I was like, hey, what's your favorite fan interaction with an actor from Star Trek?
Oh, right, yeah. That was a question of the day.
And she said that Robert Beltran leaned in and went, you smell good.
Oh, yes, I did see this.
And I just seeing him right there in the dark, he kind of like looked at Janeway all sly-like, and it made me think of her story. And I was like, I would just, I am a heterosexual married male, and I would still melt if Robert Beltran said that to me.
Seriously, how could you not? in that deep, sexy voice of his, and he's paying you a compliment like that, and, like, he's smelling you and praising you for it. Like, what? Ooh.
I was like, oh my, is this what Kate Mulgrew feels like all the time?
That this is what she did for 7 years.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Oh man, yeah. No wonder she wanted to touch him so much. Was probably, you know, kind of a reverse thing too. You know, she put his hand on his chest. You smell good.
You smell.
Is that a new cologne?
Yeah. Oh man, I wonder. That's those are little things that you don't really think about in Star Trek. Like, you never see anybody put on cologne.
No, you really don't.
You don't see anybody put on perfume.
No, like, okay, does the sonic shower take care of that, or is it just eliminated altogether?
Yeah, or maybe, I mean, people at home, if you're listening and screaming at your stereos because we got something wrong, you're like, oh, they totally did that in episode 3, season blah, 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 blah. Let us know.
Yeah, tell us. Go to the forum. We love the forum. Oh. I love that line. I live here, Jeffrey, in case you've forgotten.
Yeah. I love how, like, whenever kids are up to no good, do you really just do it in the living room where your dad could see right when he walks in?
Yeah. Okay, Jeffrey, you are doing this wrong. I suppose that's the difference between 20/21st century and the 24th is, okay, in our day and age, anything you want to do to try and get away with as a child, you do it behind closed doors
in
your bedroom.
You make sure that you can hear the garage door open at all times. And then once that happens, that's when you run like mad.
And then you throw everything under your bed and you turn on some music and you pretend like everything's hunky-dory.
Yeah.
We were all young once.
I do like how smart the doc is. I do like that he knows Klingon culture and he knows what the knife is used for. And because this is such a real situation where you were trying to obviously lie to your parents and the parent is just like, come on. Like, I'm not an idiot.
They did get this right because, well, he is a hologram. And even if he doesn't already know it, he could certainly look it up in the ship's computer and figure this out very quickly. And I do like the whole thing of, guys, this is complete BS.
That's another thing that I wonder is, can the doc look stuff up in his head?
Wouldn't you think so?
Because you see him do research on his laptop all the time.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wonder. I'm like, you're connected to the computer, right? Or is there that much of a disconnect where he really is a projection?
Or was he just designed to do that because, like, okay, from our point of view as the audience, it's much more relatable for us to see him conducting the research rather than, I'm accessing the memory banks, it's in my head, and then 2 seconds later, here's the answer.
Yeah, but we saw Data do that sometimes where he goes, processing.
That's true.
You know, that kind of thing. I don't know.
So what is the difference, really? I'm going to go with the fact that he was designed.
I'm sorry. I'm coughing. I'm still not well. But I love how his friends are walking out. He's like, call me later. Like some girl just, like, ran out on him because, like, he burped in front of her or something. Call me, okay?
Yeah, well, in the phrase, call me, subspace I am me, apparently call me still applies.
Okay, so the whole ritual is, like, Klingons, like, once they reach a certain age, they're supposed to, like, draw somebody else's blood. That's pretty crazy, and so Jeffrey wanted to go along with it. I wonder how that works in 24th century, because, you know, obviously there's not that much crime if any kind of civilian crime. So what would they do if a human, you know, did that, where they actually drew blood and had an assault crime? Now, obviously, we're still human. There's going to be fits of passion where you just can't control yourself. So obviously, you have to have some sort of police. But I wonder if they're like, wow, we haven't had this happen for a while. What's going on?
That is a really good question. That's one of those things where Star Trek is so idealized when it comes to the human race. It's pretty much impossible to actually see it for what it is, because there's always going to be somebody out there. Like, we had Lon Suter. He's a freaking serial killer.
Yeah.
You're always going to have some sort of law enforcement. It's just, are they really bored?
Yeah. And see, that's the thing is that I think you're right. There has to be law enforcement of several kinds. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be like it is today, thank God. But yeah, you're gonna have the lawn sewers. You're gonna have people who, like disagree with the ideology of the Federation, i.e., the Maquis, and so they leave. You know, and that's
right.
I feel like that's kind of the beauty of the 24th century, that it makes love it or leave it much more of a possibility.
This is true. Well, and the thing was, it's like the Maquis were considered these massive rebels. Oh, they're going to cause problems, as if this had never happened before and nobody else was doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. A lot of people have a lot of issues with Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future and how it's anti-capitalistic and everything like that. But I feel like, yes, we all have our differing ideologies, but the root of it, the base reasoning behind it is we're past what makes us evil, and we've evolved as a culture, not just as a species, and so we're better for it. I mean, that's all that you really need to take it away, is that there's that message of hope where it's the future, things will get better. That's all you need to focus on.
Right. Well, that's why we love Star Trek so much, and yet, like, it really, I don't know, in a way it really isn't that realistic, but I would rather err on the side of hope. I really would. It's hard portraying that, I think, consistently, week after week after week. It's a great idea. In practice, that's really hard.
Well, it's kind of like the whole communism idea where, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get blasted online, where on paper, communism totally works.
A great idea, right? Yeah.
Once you bring in the human perspective and the human element, it doesn't work. And thus, it's fundamentally flawed because it's built for humans and it can't exist without humans.
Right. Yeah. And this is why we can't have nice things, because we ruin it all.
We ruin everything.
Yeah.
So even in the future, hitting your head can kill you.
Apparently. And you still have to wear weird gauzy band-aids. I'm not really sure what that is. It doesn't look very futuristic, if you ask me. But whatever.
I'm all for that. I'm all for like the homegrown tactile medicine.
I just kind of wonder, okay, what is that doing? Is it keeping her from bleeding all over the place? She doesn't have a massive bruise or anything on her head. Then again, I suppose a lot of this is internal, right? If I'm recalling correctly.
Yeah. It's, okay. Yeah. Internal bleeding and all that.
Yeah. But apparently you can't stop internal bleeding in the 24th century.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not the Vidians. They can't fix everything.
Apparently not, even though every other week the doctor will manage to save somebody.
I love the episodes where they don't even try to pretend to give us an explanation, where they're like, well, doctor, how'd you do it? He's like, well, it took a long time and I did this. And then everybody's like, okay, we'll talk about that later. He's like, oh, okay,
fine. Just write a report about it. I'll read it later.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, don't care. Moving along. End of the show. See you next week. I do like how the doctor does get worn down by this whole thing. Now, obviously, this is a very exaggerated example of what real life is.
Yeah.
But I think it does show that having a family is both rewarding and stressful.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what kind of a family you have. Unless you have absolutely horrible people for a family, you're going to have the good and the bad, and you have to take both.
Right. Yeah, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I mean, every family has their ups and downs, their dysfunctions. You gotta love them for who they are. And I think this episode does illustrate that. I'm getting a little bit ahead of us, but it's because I still do not care about these Eddies. The Irish Eddies.
Looking at them, looking at these special effects, I mean, this was made very early on in the 90s, and it still looks
early
good.
On in the 90s. Yeah. No. This is later 90s.
Well, okay. So, I'm sorry. Not late 90s, but it's, when was this episode?
It was 97, so this is still early CGI, though.
Okay, I thought it was like 95 or 96. I always get that screwed up.
No, buddy. The show launched in 95, and we're in season
94.
3. Well, no, they started taping in 94, but it premiered in 95.
Oh, well, I'm just off with my dates, aren't I?
You need some coffee, buddy. I'd give you mine over the internet waves, but I, for one thing, I need it, and I'm greedy, so I'm going to keep it. But then also, we haven't been able to find a way to transport stuff yet.
I love... Okay, there was tons of debris in the eddy coming at them and everything like that. Now, this is a little bit of a separate issue, because... But the thing is, there's always times when you're like, okay, we need to go through this debris field, or we need to go through this asteroid field, or we need to make sure... We need to be very careful so we can navigate these asteroids. You're in space! You can move in 360 degrees.
Yeah. Evasive action or something?
Why don't you just go slightly up? Kind of like in Undiscovered Country when Praxis exploded. It's
right.
Like, turn yourself
turn her
into
the wave.
How about you just go up a few hundred kilometers and you'll be fine?
Yeah, Star Trek likes to forget this. Space is not linear, guys.
There was one time, there was a Futurama episode where there was a ship transporting oil, and these bunch of space hippies created a human ring around the ship and, like, locked arms. And they're like, okay, everybody lock arms. Don't let them go. And then the spaceship just went up slightly and flew over them. And they're like, oh, you forgot that you could move in 360 degrees in space. They're like, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
That's awesome. Yes, Star Trek forgot this as well. Now, if they would have just explained this away with, oh, the gravitational flux, blah, 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 is pulling us in. We can't move, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, 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 nah.
It's like, oh, wait, there's a Z-axis? Holy crap.
Weird. What do you think about this scene here?
Well, I love that, like, his social life, his family life is bleeding over into his work life. And that happens all the time. It's a real thing. And he's yelling at Tom because he's really upset about his daughter. And it kind of shows how he views Tom.
Yes, it really does. Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's much more of a paternal instinct towards Tom, which is really funny if you think about it.
Yeah, because we've not really seen this before. It's usually, you know, hey, medic boy, do your job.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, that's another thing, is even the doctor, who is, you know, probably one of the most professionals in the medical field here, his personal life is interfering with his professional life, which we as career people have to struggle with every single day. Sometimes it's hard to keep that in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like this episode for the fact that it's such a mirror to what really anybody goes through in their daily lives. We can all relate to this somehow. We've all got work lives. We've all got family lives.
And that was one criticism that TOS and TNG got a lot is that they didn't focus on their non-work lives that much. Mm-hmm. You know, when you consider the ship of the Enterprise, it's a bunch of people working in space that have no life. Now, I know there's exceptions to every rule, but I'm just saying that was one criticism for a while. And I like that in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, we see a lot of these people after hours. We see them hanging out in their quarters. We see them eating with each other. We see them doing hobbies, like creating a Ford Camaro, you know, like they're
Jalapenos too.
Cooking, you know, we see Sisko creating a dinner for his senior staff, you know, like things like that. It was just really cool to see that stuff. Now, granted, in TNG, we got poker, but that's about it.
Yeah, not a whole lot. We saw Troy eating Sundays every now and again, but you're right. We did get
vacations.
More of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to see them being more real people, because nobody is on duty all the time. And I feel like Voyager could have done even more, just because this was such a tight-knit ship. We should have seen a lot more of them relaxed around each other.
Yeah.
Do you know, what I don't know, doing more in their off hours. Let's really intimately get to know them and show off how close this crew is.
Like going to Fairhaven together.
No.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
No.
Like that.
No.
What you're describing is exactly Fairhaven.
I was thinking Sandrine's myself, but each to our own here.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. She just said, when will I be able to see again? Holy crap.
I'm sure parents everywhere just cringed with that line.
Seriously, that's the thing, is like, you know, you and I aren't parents, and so I can't even imagine what it would be like watching this as a parent.
Right. I have a feeling it would just stab you in the heart.
Oh, God.
Because it's heartbreaking to watch it, and I don't have a child.
Yeah.
So I have no idea just how intrinsic these feelings are. But I feel like it's very well done.
Yeah, I think she's a great little actress.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And, like, there are times when, excuse me, everyone. There are times when, you know, I watch stuff like this, and I don't even have a family connection that's remotely close to what I'm watching, but I still go, oh, the feels. Oh, mm-hmm. God.
Right into the feels, straight into the heart. This is another thing, too, where the family is coming together because of a catastrophic event.
Yes. Yes. There was a situation where, I think 2 years ago, my father needed a quadruple bypass. And,
oh, my goodness.
And then, you know, I show up to the hospital right before a surgery, and I expect to see my mom there, obviously, and my sister there, and my brother-in-law. But mm-hmm. my grandparents showed up, my aunt and uncles showed up, my cousin showed up, my second cousin showed up, and they took off work to be there.
Wow. It's three things. It's weddings, funerals, and major health crises that bring people together.
Yeah.
Hate to say it, but it's true. Like, I'll see relatives at funerals that I haven't seen in 20 years. People showed up to my wedding that I've never seen before in my life, and we are mm-hmm. distantly blood related.
Yeah.
And I've not seen them since. Yeah, yeah.
And so they're watching their child die.
Yeah. Do you think it's a little extreme?
I think it's definitely extreme. I mean, they wanted to hit all of the points of family relations in one episode.
That they like, did, too.
Within,
they
like,
did.
20 minutes, you see them having dinner together, and they all love each other, to the older son acting out and hanging out with the wrong crowd, the husband and wife not paying enough attention to each other, somebody getting sick, and them watching them die. That's, wow! That's a lifetime of experiences in 20 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much. And then what really bugs me is, spoiler alert, in case you haven't seen this episode, we're never going to see these people again. The doctor never reprises his family. And that kind of ticks me off because you can't just end your family.
Well, he's kind of started it out of the blue, you know, midway through.
I guess.
And you can't really do that either.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
We should have seen something. We should have seen a mention or an off-screen happenstance. But, you know, there you have it. There's tons of threads throughout Star Trek that just don't get picked up again when they should.
Yeah, they just drop them. I would have loved to have known if he just even continued the program beyond this. We never know. And that's the episode, everybody. That'd be that. So, real life isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
We're on the same page.
Yes.
High five.
This is creepy.
Yeah.
We actually did it, too.
We actually tried to do a high five through the camera, so that was embarrassing, but whatever.
Continuing mission.
I feel like this, like that's a really great idea for a stoner movie. So maybe for the next project, I don't know.
And the name of the film will be Giant Green Lazy Susan.
There you go.
Earl Grey.
VHS Star Trek interactive board game.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
Humans have taken over the Enterprise. You now have 30 minutes to stop me.
The Ready Room.
He says, I think your compassion for this species is overriding your judgment. And Archer says, my compassion guides my judgment. Mm-hmm. And I really like that line, because I felt like that really just kind of sums everything up.
The Orb.
So imagine we didn't have Opaka. Imagine we had Kai Winn from the very beginning. How do you think the setup of the series would have been?
Axanar, the official podcast.
So is the full-length Axanar going to be in the same style, the same documentary style as Prelude to Axanar? And the answer is no. No, absolutely not. Axanar itself will be a full-length movie, a feature movie, just like you would, you know, any other Star Trek movie or other movie.
To the journey!
Cable is definitely more suited toward a niche show like Star Trek is.
Compared to broadcast, yes, I think it's...
Yeah, absolutely. It's much more probable that we would see it on, say, AMC than we would on NBC.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
When Star Trek 2009 came out, I made a joke to somebody at some point that J.J. Abrams got all of his lens flares from Close Encounters surplus.
Yeah.
But they just didn't use them all, and he just bought them at some sort of, maybe a garage sale or something.
Warp 5.
You know pretty well which way the insectoids and the reptilians are, yeah, are going to come down on any issue. It's left up to the indecisive one. Instead of the 12 angry men, it's the 6 angry Zindi.
Melodic Treks.
Now, as I mentioned, he wrote and conducted the scores for 2 episodes of Star Trek Enterprise in the 2nd season. They are Kanama and Regeneration. And Regeneration is one of the best episodes of Star Trek Enterprise ever, in my humble opinion.
Literary Treks.
We're trying to keep it light. We're trying to keep it personable. We're trying to keep it fun. If Vanguard, you know, was all about being the Battlestar Galactica reboot of Star Trek, this is more about trying to be the Eureka or the Warehouse 13.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available pretty much any way that you want to listen to your podcasts these days. And we have so many podcasts that we cannot do them all without the help of a sponsor. And so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So before we go, we have an iTunes review to discuss, and we have Emily WWU to thank for writing us a wonderful review in the U.S. iTunes store. So thank you very much for that, Emily, and we're glad that we can make you laugh. And if you out there want us to give you a shout out on the show like we just did with Emily, leaving in a review in iTunes or on Stitcher is the way to do it. So if you haven't done that yet, we would really appreciate it. It helps us out. It helps other people find the show. And in this case, the more the merrier. And so there's several ways that you can contact us. One way is to go to trek.fm/contact, and you can email us that way. Send us a message about the show and let us know what you think. Or you can go on the forums, and you can go to trek.fm/forums and get in on the Trek Talk with other listeners as well as us. But then we also chat a lot with listeners on Twitter. So where can people find you, Tristan?
Well, you can find me at TheInsaneRobin on Twitter. And where can we find you?
You can find me at OhTheProfanity. And lately, people have kind of been wondering a little bit about other things that we do besides TTJ. And guess what? We do. So where else can people find you?
Well, that's one thing that I wanted to talk about today is that I run another podcast called The Nerd Party with Matt Hansen. And we talk about general geek stuff, general nerd stuff. And we've done about 4 episodes. We just released the 4th one a couple of days ago. And I mentioned the show on a previous podcast of To the Journey. And after I mentioned the show here, our listens shot straight up. We got more listeners than we ever had. And so I just want to thank To the Journey listeners for coming in force. And you really made a difference in our views and our listens. If you haven't listened to it yet, please try it out. It's go to thenerdparty.com. And if you like us, give us a review or hit subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen. It would be much appreciated. And Char, where else can we find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM very often, especially on The Ready Room, where I will often co-host with Chris Jones. And usually it's to discuss a Voyager episode. So if you like what we do here on To the Journey, check out the Voyager episodes of The Ready Room because we do in-depth episode discussions on that show. But you can also find me on Mouthy Broadcast with the lovely Jenny Zell, among other fantastic ladies. and we discuss, well, anything and everything. And you know what? Next week, I think we got another good episode coming to you. What are we doing?
What we're doing next week is something that I love doing and that we don't do that often, and that's an episode rewrite. And what the episode that we're rewriting is episode 22 from season 4, Unforgettable. An alien female from a cloaked ship asks for Chakotay by name and requests asylum on Voyager from her people.
We're gonna give it some TLC next week, and so until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!